I got in school and just kind of stuck my head in a book and was just achieving and going and doing, and I lost the ability to explore what was meaningful to me. And it was like, well, you just go to school, it's what you do, and you take these subjects, and then you get pushed in this direction, and you do that, and you accomplish, and you get another degree, and you keep moving forward, and they say this is going to be good for you, and, you know, open doors for you, so you do it.
Right.
But I stopped really thinking about, like, well, what is it that I want?
Welcome back to the MCP. My name is Rick Alexander. I host the Morning Coffee Podcast. Today we have our long form interview style show. Of course, on Mondays and Fridays we do a 10 to 15 minute show, and I try to pack as much philosophy, psychology, and thought as I can into those episodes. And of course, if you want even more, then you can check out the Monday meditations. You go to rickalexander.com and sign up for those. Essentially, what that is another 10 to 15 minute episode, but that one's got a lot of sources, and that one is much more contemplative, and it's more of me actually just working through ideas that I've been working on in my own life. And so it gives you some references and places where you can further your own research. So check out rickalexander.com if you're interested in that. And of course, if you are digging the show, if you would share it with a friend, send it to a friend, or head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review, it would mean the world to me. Today, I'm interviewing Kate Pate. She has a PhD in neurophysiology and is CEO and founder of a military medical technology startup called Karuna Medical. She's also the director of research for Heroic Hearts Project, a nonprofit focused on bringing struggling veterans to retreat centers for healing through the powerful plant medicine, ayahuasca. And if you guys remember last week, of course, we did a 3-part series on my own journey with ayahuasca, first time I've used it. You know, the thing that has brought me into psychedelics, though, is being a veteran myself, I'm so interested in the work that this can do in the veteran space, because that is a population that I've seen suffer firsthand. She's also the director of research for Unlimited Sciences, a psychedelic research nonprofit that combines the power of data and lived experiences to serve the community, educate the public, and inform common sense practices and policies. Additionally, Kate is a human performance research partner with Black Lab Sports and TBI research partner with Invictus Project. That's another 501c3 that takes a diagnostics-first approach to treat the root cause of TBI, PTSD, and depression in combat veterans. When she's not wearing one of her many hats, you'll most likely find her playing amongst the mountains of Colorado on foot, on skis, on two wheels, and hanging with her friends, family, and dogs. And I really enjoy this episode because we did delve into a lot of the different things that she's working on and how those all kind of come together to help her find her purpose in life. And of course, we connect on the endurance piece as well. We're both pretty avid adventure athletes, so there's always a lot that we can learn from each other in that perspective. But yeah, Kate drove down to Denver after a day in the mountains, and we just had a really candid conversation about finding purpose in life. So I hope you guys enjoy this one. Without further ado, on to the show. All right, so we were talking a little bit pre-show about purpose and sort of defining goals that fall within the purpose and just trying to, within your purpose, and trying to navigate through that mess is what I'm gonna call it. Because I feel like as like a driven person, the first thing I feel like you start to figure out about the world is that things aren't so straightforward. And so you chase something for a while, and purpose just feels like this very elusive thing to a lot of people, definitely to me quite often in my life. And so I'd love to dive into first, let's just break down what purpose is to you, and then maybe we'll just see where we're at, whether we agree or whether, cool, you know, where we're at with that, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, awesome.
So for you, purpose.
Yeah, I think for me, I kind of arrived at purpose through, I guess chasing things and figuring out what did or didn't work or what did or didn't fit. And it's, I think we all go through that kind of trial and error and just trying to figure out what keeps us going in life. And I think you figure out a lot more things that don't resonate with you than do through that, which is valuable information. But recently I had purpose reframed for me in a way that really made sense. And the way that the person was describing it is, if you had all of the money in the world and infinite health and perfect family, everything was just perfect, as much as you could imagine, what would you spend your time doing? What would bring value to your life if you didn't have to, if you weren't working for money, basically, if you just were trying to fill your
life? So all needs are met.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what would be a meaningful way for you to spend your time that would actually be a worthwhile living, right?
Sure.
An existence that is truly being alive and, I guess, on fire and with passion.
Right.
So what would that be? And at the same time, if you could imagine yourself having everything taken from you, so your money, your family, your health, just everything is gone, but you're still alive and you still have a significant period of time on the planet, what in those moments would you do? What would you do in the same way to provide meaning and provide fulfillment in your life? And I know that's a really hard one for people to grasp, and I think a lot of people that I've talked to about this have said that it would be different. The idea is to have it be the same thing in both scenarios, and that should kind of give you an idea of what maybe your purpose could be. But I know that some people get hung up on that second scenario because of the money thing, and they're like, well, I would just have to work any job to get money. And I hear that, but I think if you could just forget about having to make the money, but just really, like, you're almost like in rock bottom. Like, what would be there to provide that sense of meaning for you?
So scenario one is you have everything.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to spend your time?
Yeah.
Scenario two is you've got nothing. How are you going to spend your time?
Mm-hmm. Almost like you have nothing to lose, right? Like, because right. Everything's already been lost.
Right. And actually, I don't know that I fantasize about that, but I do think about it quite often. Like, to me, I feel like put my back against the wall and
yeah.
Like I will, the best me will come out.
Yeah, absolutely.
For some people, I think it's that way.
Yeah.
For me, it's the, okay, I have everything. I don't know what to do. That right. Feels harder for me.
Yeah.
But so the idea in this exercise, I guess, for people listening at home is there's something, if that were a Venn diagram, there's something in the middle
mm-hmm.
that you could be doing right now that right. would add tremendous value to your life.
Right.
I like that because the first time when I had you on, when it was Lionheart Radio, we talked about like biotech, right? Which mm-hmm. is essentially, if you are not careful, outsourcing your intuition. And now we're like, yeah. Now we're like on the opposite polarity on the new channel, which is perfect because
yeah.
That's where I'm going. So, okay. So as you started, did you find that question to be hard to walk through, or did answers come to you kind of right away? And I'm sort of thinking as you're
yeah,
talking.
You know, I had, this is maybe a little bit woo woo, but I do meditate a lot and
yeah,
I went
be as
on,
woo as you want.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I've been on a few meditation retreats and it's complete silence and meditation, like up to 9 hours a day. Really intense, like, you know, formal meditation practice. Some of it's walking meditation, but the majority of it's seated. And it's all silent. And there's a lot that bubbles up out of that space. It's like embracing silence and creating space allows what is needed to manifest.
To surface for you.
Yes. And during that experience a couple of years ago, I was kind of exploring, like, what the hell am I doing with my life? Like, I didn't feel satisfied in my job, and we can get into that in a minute, but how I ended up in the wrong career for me personally.
PhD in exercise physiology.
PhD in neurophysiology.
In neurophysiology. Okay.
Yeah. And I am working in the human performance realm now to some degree, but it's like I'm dabbing a toe in it and it's not my expertise, but I've been doing a lot of different things with that degree okay. over the years.
Expertise probably means different things to different people.
Yeah.
Most people listening to this don't have your knowledge, but okay.
Yeah. Well, so with the, now I'm losing my train of thought because I was thinking about exercise.
Well, so when you're in these meditation retreats and you allow the silence to
yes.
bring these things to the surface.
Right. And I was talking about how I was in the wrong career.
Yeah.
So what bubbled up for me in one of these retreats in particular a couple years ago was just this, like the word healer kind of bubbled up, and it was like, what is that? Mm. And it was nothing else. It was just that. And I started thinking about that, and it started to feel like, you know, a coat that fit. I put that on and it was like, man, I think that there's something in this that feels right for me. And then I started thinking about, okay, healer, to me, that's like medical degree, right? Like go heal people directly, put your hands on them and
right.
do that. But then it was broader than that. It was like, I don't know that in and of itself is what defines a healer to me. I think that there are different things that can need healing, right? So certainly a physical body, but then there's the mental and the spiritual part too. And there are many ways to be a healer. And so I've been kind of playing with this idea of what it means to be a healer. But I feel like the more I explore that and how that relates to my my day-to-day, I'm finding that feels like my purpose. Mm. And I don't know necessarily what, like if there's one specific thing I'm supposed to be doing with it or many things. So we talked briefly earlier about medical school and I'm certainly considering that, but there are a lot of cons to that path too that don't necessarily resonate with me personally.
Right.
And there, like I mentioned, there are other ways other than just, you know, using Western medicine to heal a body. There are plenty of other ways that you can do that.
Sure.
And a lot of the projects I'm working on with some nonprofits currently can kind of, I guess, be considered other ways to heal people. These are, you know, for nonprofits that are working with also holding retreats, different plant medicines and meditation mm-hmm. and things like that that are really enabling people to heal in other ways. And I'm finding meaning and purpose for me in those
other healing modalities.
Yes, and like the work that I do with them as well. And so I'm really exploring what does a healer mean in today's world, but also for me personally. And it's been really fun to play in this space. And that's where I feel most alive. And it's like, you know, when you're staying up till 4 a.m. working on something and you lose track of all time, that happens to me when I'm doing things related to that purpose.
Okay.
But if I'm, you know, just writing the next research grant, like I will be banging my head against the wall. But that's been my life for the past, you know, 10, 15 years is research.
And right.
So it's a tricky.
And now you feel like you're ready for something else.
I am. Yeah.
So for people that like, I'm interested. So this healing thing, did it came up in your meditation, but is this like something that you've been circling? It's like been in your economy and your thought process lately, or did it sort of come up and you're like, whoa, something new?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I had pushed it so far out of my mind that it didn't seem accessible, but it's something I can remember being a little kid and knowing that was my path in some way. Just having it started with animals and then it translated to people, and it was always me running around trying to like help everyone and be like, yeah, I mean like a little, you know, immature tiny little kid, but just trying to heal everybody. And I remember one time, just to give you an example, so my uncle had polio and was in a wheelchair because of it and was paralyzed basically from the waist down. And one day I must have been like 8 years old, and I had a little vial. I think I used to have like beads in it or something. Uh-huh. But I had a little plastic, or maybe it was glass vial with a little metal cap. And I dumped all the beads out and I put like some water and maybe some like salt and sugar and food coloring or something. And I was making like some cure.
Yeah.
I told my mom that I needed to cook it because I was making a cure for my uncle for his polio. And so I stuck this little vial in the microwave with a metal cap and
just blew up.
nearly blew up the house. But
that's great.
But little things like that where it was just always, I mean, I think some of that's just natural to little kids being precocious. But for me, it was really more than that. And I think that was something that was a big part of my life. And then I got in school and just kind of stuck my head in a book and was just achieving and going and doing. And I lost the ability to explore what was meaningful to me. And it was like, well, you just go to school. It's what you do. And you take these subjects and then you get pushed in this direction and you do that and you accomplish and you get another degree and you keep moving forward. And they say this is going to be good for you and, you know, open doors for you. So you do it.
Right.
But I stopped really thinking about like, well, what is it that I want and what is meaningful for me.
Right.
So I kind of pushed that out of my life and my consciousness for a while. And I think it was a little too painful to dwell on because I was so unhappy in various times in the past in my career. And it was a little painful to like go there. But during this meditation, it was like, boom, just right in front of my face, and I couldn't, there wasn't anything, I couldn't not look at it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, okay, there's like three things I want to unpack here, if I can keep them all in my mind. So the first, well, just one thing is with meditation, with silence, one of the things I've noticed is like people that can't sit in silence, it's like you have too many loose ends, mm-hmm. right? And so they all start coming up and you're just like, give me something, put the TV on, like, let me just like put my attention somewhere mm-hmm. because of all these things that are coming up. So I just wanted to mention that, like, just because I think if people that are listening to this, if you're not familiar with my work, and if you're not familiar with silence, right, then there's probably, we can avoid a lot in our life. We can bypass a lot, we can repress a lot. And so mm-hmm. just being open to seeing what silence brings up for you is something that I think is definitely worth pursuing in your life. One of the things I've realized is if you don't have time to meditate in your life, the top is spinning outside of your control mm-hmm. in some way, right? Yeah. And I know like people are busy and there's kids and there's life and there's all this stuff, but I promise if you can't take 5 minutes to just be in silence, it's sort of outside of your control. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about a little bit here is the fact that you're noticing this intrinsic purpose, which I'm beginning to believe that our mission and our purpose in life, it kind of finds us mm-hmm. just as much as we find it. Like, it's like we're always interested in some of the same things and we keep crossing paths with the same ideas. And eventually, I think maybe it's like blurry, but as you get closer to it, it starts to get a little more focused. You can see what you're doing. What I think's interesting is everybody, you know, one of the things you mentioned as you're going to school is you have this like, well, it's just what you do. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the outside of that. And I'm like, for me, a PhD is just not what you do. But what I think is amazing is, or worth mentioning here is everybody has those. Like, yeah. This is what you just do. This is what you do.
Right.
And so I think it's worth exploring how do you pivot from implanted purpose, like you were saying pre-show. It's like mm-hmm. that wasn't, did you have, I guess let's start with that. Did you know that that was something that you were, did it feel disingenuous?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this is the hardest part is that, so what I the context of this is I was finishing my undergraduate degree and always wanted to do meaningful work. I wanted to be like the next Jane Goodall. I wanted to go out and work with chimpanzees and
oh dang.
Yeah, that was my dream. Okay. And wanted to do meaningful work and make a positive impact on the planet. And loved animals. I was thinking about maybe being a veterinarian and then maybe a human doctor, medical doctor. And so I was playing around with that, but I transferred schools 3 times during 3 years of undergrad. And each time I went to summer school. So by the time I got to my junior year, they were like, you've got to get out of here. You're done. Like you have, and I wasn't ready. I mean, I was 19, 20 years old, and they were like, okay, you gotta go and be done and go get a job. And I'm like, I have a zoology degree with a French minor. Like, what am I going to do with that? Like, not set up for success.
Right.
That whole thing about follow your dreams when you're in college, you know, in undergrad, I, you know, was pursuing something that was interesting to me, but it was still just about achieving and going and checking the boxes of getting the classes done. So when they were like, you have to go, I didn't know what to do. I couldn't really get a job at the time, and I wouldn't get into any professional program for, you know, an MD or a doctor of veterinary medicine. I just wouldn't have gotten in. So I was like, crap, like, what am I gonna do? And I should have just taken a year off and just gotten some random job and figured it out later and taken the time. But I had a physiology professor who was like, you know, Kate, like, you're really good at this. Like, you should consider doing a PhD and doing research, because he was coming at it as a researcher himself. Right. And he's like, I'm passionate about this. Everybody should be. And so he's like, you should do this. And so I was like, oh, I'm good at this. I guess I should do that, you know? And it was kind of, it was an option for me.
Right.
So I started looking into it with like the few months of school that I had left, and there was actually a really great opportunity to pursue a PhD and get a scholarship for it. And again, like I was the one who loved, you know, all kinds of science in school, but I didn't love being in the lab. And here I was embarking on this potential journey to be in the lab all the time, like do research all the time.
Right.
But I was like, I bet I'll learn to love it. I bet I'll learn to enjoy this process. And I'm sure there will be some great things that come out of this. And so I applied and got into the program and started very early on just reading research articles in this particular area of respiratory neurophysiology. And it was very interesting to me, but as soon as we had to get into the lab work and, you know, it just, it became very apparent very early on that it wasn't the right fit. Mm. But I'm also super stubborn. So it was like, you know, I got into it and was like, well, but I can do it.
Right.
And everybody's telling me that this is going to lead to something great. So I'm miserable, but I'm just going to go, I'm going to go for it. And so I just sucked it up for 4 years and it was really hard. And I wasn't in a great place back then either. And I think that also kind of held me back in my ability to think outside of the box. Because at some point I could have been like, you know what, this isn't for me. I'm just done. I'm going to go do something else. But that like wasn't an option. I didn't grow up with the mindset where that was a choice.
Right.
It was like you do what you say you're going to do.
Only now, I mean, really do I think that's becoming a choice of the vast majority of people.
Yeah.
Whereas before, like you really had to be, I mean, like our parents' generation, it's like you had to be very entrepreneurial and like that was what you were doing. And you know, only now with new media and all this, you know, now it's like tons of options.
Sure.
But and it's like, if you don't know what to do, there's also so many podcasts you can listen to and things you can do now to start going down a different road.
Right.
But I'm just curious, like, how do we justify the sacrifices we make to ourselves? Mm-hmm. You know, that's something I've been asking myself a lot lately.
Yeah. Well, and what I'll say about that is, you know, I mean, I sucked it up and finished the degree and then basically I went and did a postdoc and I wasn't happy doing that either. It was even worse.
Shit.
And it just kind of kept getting, like the things that I didn't necessarily hate. It's not like I hated every minute. There were obviously like moments within all of these experiences where there was some really awesome stuff I got to do and experience and see and be a part of. But the majority looking back is colored by just unhappiness, I would say. Mm. But all of these things led me to new opportunities. Each one opened more doors for me. And I followed this path that led me to where I am today, which I am so grateful for all the opportunities I've had because I almost have so many opportunities and options really in totally. Front of me today
right.
that would not have existed had I not followed that path. And I'm making my way back to purpose. It's like, I think because you are unhappy, you start to take that information as valuable. And then you're like, okay, well, I'm not happy doing this. That's important. What about this isn't helpful?
Yeah.
And then let's do something different and see if that gets me closer. And so I'm kind of in this phase now of working more towards, I'm letting go of the idea of things like what other people think of like, well, you know, you should do this or you've been doing that for so long and, or you said you were gonna, you know, do this project or whatever. And now I'm just like, you know what? Like this doesn't resonate with me and I don't know how much time I have on the planet. I wanna feel like I'm really making a difference and that I'm just stoked to do it. And the things that were leading up to this didn't necessarily give that to me. But of course, like I said, there's always a silver lining. There's always a benefit in everything that you do. And it opened doors for me that I love life. Like I'm so excited about the things that are in front of me now.
Yeah.
So, I
think that's such an important thing. Like, it's like, you gotta push through for a few reasons. One, I want something you mentioned there, which I truly believe is that doing the wrong thing is just as important. Like how many people like have, like I think have a lot of ideas about what they could do. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, I could have done that. Or like, I heard those stories growing up a ton.
Yeah.
And it was just like, but why didn't you? Right.
Exactly.
And you know, maybe you start down this thing, this could have, would have, should have thing. You decide to actually do it and you hate it. It's like, great. Now it's not going to be a loose end in your mind. Right. Now. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now you know where not to go. Perfect.
Right.
But it is hard to sort of stay positive, I guess, in that aspect. But one of the things I began to think about life is I don't know that we can do it wrong. Right. It's like you said, it's like, it wasn't the path that like you would have chosen, right? Knowing what you know, you can never go back. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why it's hindsight. But at the same time, like, I think the same thing with my military career, like it really, like, my values changed. And I really was like, okay, I'm lying to myself about what I want to do with my life. So it's time to do the thing, you know? But it was so useful. It opened up so many doors. Like, I know I'm such a better human being for having traveled that path.
Totally.
And I think part of the challenge is, when people are at the end of their road doing whatever they're doing, you know, the nurse that's unhappy or the, it doesn't matter what it is, because it's so individual. You know, I tend to try not to talk about the military too much because I don't want it to seem like I'm talking shit about the military. I'm actually talking about my fit specifically and what I was doing and like so many different factors. But how do you reach that person to like let them know, you know, it's like, how do you tell somebody that all the mistakes were actually perfect, you know, like, and that's some of the things that some of these esoteric things in life have really showed me, like plant medicines, like meditation. It's like really shown me the value in mistakes.
Yeah. I love that you said you can't do it wrong, like about life.
Yeah. Right? I don't think you can.
I really believe that too. And that includes all of the really shitty things that happen to you,
totally.
You know, that you may do to yourself, that you may do to other people, that other people do to you, that life hands you, whatever it may be. I heard it once through, I can't remember who said it, but it was part of a meditation retreat, and they were talking about like just traumas that we work with. And I think this is a good example for many things in life, but what you go through is the universe or God or whoever you believe in or whatever, if you don't believe in any of that, it's just a creative way to put you through something to get you to grow and to get you to wake up and become more who you're supposed to be. And I really liked that representation of struggle, because I do think that, I mean, you learn something from every experience, whether it's positive or negative, and the negatives are only negative because we give them that label.
Yeah.
But there's so much, like sometimes now it's like if I have some sort of obstacle in front of me, I have to just sit there and smile because I'm like, okay, what am I going to learn from this? Like, how am I going to grow and be different? But every time it's like you come out better for it, and you figure more out about who you are and what you're here for, what you want to do with yourself and your life while you're here.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really important for people to remember. So it's like if you are finding yourself in one of those places where you're miserable or you just feel like things just keep going wrong, just remember, you know, like there's a reason for all of this stuff and you can't do it wrong. So every choice you make, there's something that you're going to learn from that.
Right. And I think that is the thing that we, you know, it seems to me that we all have this idealized version of who we should be in our head. At least for me, I know when I'm afraid I could make the wrong decision. The reason I'm afraid is because I'm like, oh, is this what I'm supposed to do? Like, is this moving away from that idealized version of myself?
Yeah.
And that is a prison that's really hard to get out of sometimes, you know?
You're like paralyzed. You're like, I can't make any choices.
Yeah, and if it weren't for some of those healing modalities that I've messed with, I just don't know that I would have ever gotten out of some of them.
Yeah.
Especially for me, I grew up in a very dogmatically religious household. Like there's like strict rules to this life thing, you know? And so when you find that what you're intrinsically excited about isn't necessarily falling within the confines of how you've been taught to live, it's like just an excruciating, painful experience.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So out of all of these healing modalities that you've been messing with, and as you're experimenting with purpose, I'm just curious, which ones have you found to be the most beneficial for yourself?
You know, I think that all of them, so I'll start with meditation. That's the first thing that I really, and so for people who aren't aware, so while all of this stuff was going on, the backstory kind of behind the scenes is I was struggling with a pretty severe eating disorder for a very long time that took root in, it for me, it was never about body image or anything like that. It was a way for me to control the chaos in my life and to manage traumatic situations in a way that I just didn't have any tools when I was young.
Yeah, you just controlled something.
Right? Something, anything.
Control, yeah.
And it became a distraction that allowed me to stay numb to painful situations. Like, you know, I could, and I've written about this before, but it's like I could embrace any kind of physical pain and physical suffering, but anytime I had an emotional pain or suffering, it was like, I can't deal with that. I can't go there, so I need to like numb, distract, suppress, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that was what I learned in my household growing up, and it's kind of what you see generally around in society, how people manage themselves. But that was something that I was struggling with, and also kind of similar abusive relationship with alcohol too over the years, and that was another way for me very effectively to numb.
Super effective, yeah.
And I realized that those weren't, I mean, I always knew that those weren't helpful, but I was like, I don't know how to let go of these things, because what is going to be left? How am I going to manage this excruciating pain that I'm in? I don't know what to do with that. Mm. And I think meditation was the very first tool that I stumbled across that allowed me to work with these really difficult things in my life and let go of certain things, but also to be able to look at things, like to really, you know, it's, I think it's hard for a lot of people to look at themselves and maybe the shadows or the behaviors that they don't love.
Yeah.
And we all have them, totally. You know, and they manifest in various ways, and totally normal. Congratulations, you're human, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And I think how you work with that or those things is really important. And I think meditation for me has been a really powerful tool to manage those difficult things, and then to be able to look at them and kind of, instead of continuously reject those like shadow parts of yourself, just welcome them back and work with them.
Yeah.
And then let go of things that are kind of holding you back, if that makes sense.
Yeah. To me, this feels like the relevant conversation around abuse for all of these things. Like,
yeah.
You know, right now the opioid epidemic is just out of control. Somebody in my hometown dies of heroin constantly, as a heroin overdose, and which is it wild for me, because growing up, high school and stuff, it just like was so far from me.
Yeah.
It seemed to be anyway, and now I see it. And so, but the question I keep asking is like, what, do we want to talk about what they're escaping from,
mm-hmm.
right? Because people, like, you know, when people talk about getting sober for something, it's like, you know, but there's a reason that they turn to it in the first place, and whatever that reason is, it's still going to be there no matter how many times you've bypassed it.
Yeah.
Same thing, you can spiritually bypass stuff the same way, right?
Like, absolutely.
You see New Age people do it constantly.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so whenever you take that thing, it's like now you're left with that same discomfort, and we have such a hard time sitting in our own discomfort,
mm-hmm.
it seems.
Absolutely. And I think that's why a lot of people don't like silence and don't like to be alone. And that certainly for me, it was like when I was alone, that was like, you know, all of the demons, all the darkness, whatever shows up and you're like, shit, like,
right.
How do I manage this, you know?
Right.
And I think that's most people. And sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes, you know, those things are really powerful and it can catch you off guard because we don't grow up in a way, at least I certainly didn't grow up in a way that teaches you to look at these things and bring awareness to it. I think meditation was the first tool. One, it made me realize that I was just like everyone else and that I wasn't fucked up and broken and, you know, all these things that people make you think about yourself if you struggle in any way.
Right.
And it's not true. We all have that and we all experience that. And that was the first beautiful gift I got from these meditation practices, is like, this is something that is like a collective human experience. And then understanding that kind of gave me a little bit more comfort with like, oh, okay, maybe I can look at this stuff because it's not like I'm just flawed and I'm the only one who's dealing with this. And I'm just kind of a, you know, cracked pot or something. And,
right,
you know,
right.
And so really learning practices that allowed me to remain in silence and remain alone and not be worried that I was going to be like overwhelmed or overpowered by something else was really valuable for me.
Cool.
So that was the first thing. And then my path in the work that I do with military and veterans and just different organizations had led me to plant medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was kind of I'd say like meditation saved my life. And then plant medicines taught me how to fully live it.
Mm.
So
that's a good way to put it, yeah.
I mean, we can talk about specific ones. I don't know if that is of interest, but it's like...
Dude, it's come up on every show I've done this year.
Really?
Honestly, yeah, even when I'm not... So the shows that are airing this week as we're recording this are... It's like a three-part series on our ayahuasca trip.
Cool.
But then the two guests, both weeks before that, brought it up without me.
Oh, funny.
It up, and I'm just like... You know,
something's happening.
Totally. And I think what I'm trying to do is work through it in a way that I don't come across as telling people that it's their answer.
Yeah, for
That's
sure.
That's what I'm so hesitant to do.
Yeah.
It's such a strong healing modality.
Yeah.
And it can point you in a place where you need to do, it can show you what work you need to do.
Absolutely.
To me, that's what it does.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, I think people sometimes get so, we want something to be the answer so
mm-hmm.
badly that
mm-hmm.
we're like, oh, so that's it. Okay, so that's what I have to do.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's essential oils. Oh, so it's CBD. Oh, so it's breath work.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's psychedelics. It's like, It's you. It's always been you.
It's always been you, yeah.
And they can open up different doorways to show you different things you can work on. But at the end of the day, it's got to be you. So with that being said, let's talk about it.
Cool. Yeah, and I think the other thing too, I'll just add to that, is a lot of people are looking for a quick fix and assume that this is a quick fix too, like any kind of plant medicines. And what I would say to that, just real quick, is that certainly an experience on ayahuasca can be life-changing and you won't be the same after that, but it doesn't mean you won't still have to work your ass off for it. So I would just put that out there. So yes, you will be a different person, but it doesn't mean that all of a sudden everything will be easy for you.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling now.
Yeah, right? It's almost harder.
It's almost harder.
Yeah, and people need to be prepared for that. I actually was talking to Danger Chair. I was on Kyle Kingsbury's podcast with Heroic Hearts Project recently.
Oh, great.
And he was talking about, we were talking about ayahuasca and the veteran work that Heroic Hearts Project does. And in the podcast, I said that ayahuasca wasn't for everyone. I truly believe that there are some people who really don't need that, or it's not their path, or would maybe be going to it for the wrong reasons. And Kyle said, actually, you know, I truly believe that it is for everyone. I think everybody should have access to this stuff. But he was like, but I get what you're saying, and that you should only approach it if you truly feel called to it.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be forced into it, and you shouldn't go into it with the wrong intentions. And I've had some people in my life recently really try to go, even psilocybin, just go into these things just like, I just want to fix myself. And like the intention maybe wasn't there. It was more of just looking for a quick fix. And so that's been frustrating because I've seen that too. And I don't want to deter people from doing it. It's their own path and their own journey. But I also try to remind people that this is important work, and you know, you should have a real meaning to your intent to go. But yeah, ayahuasca was, so I had never, I grew up in the DARE era, so it was like no drugs ever.
Totally, yeah.
So ayahuasca was the first drug. Well,
dude, scraping DARE out of my brain has just been the weirdest experience. Okay.
Glad we're on the same page.
Yeah.
So ayahuasca was the first thing I had ever done. And that was, and I was definitely scared. I was nervous, but I also knew that I needed to, I was still struggling with the eating disorder and still alcohol, you know, issues as well, and not fully being able to let that stuff go. And ayahuasca was the most important thing in my path for that. So for that, I'm forever grateful. But what I'll say is that the work was still there when I came back. It certainly, medicine certainly showed me things that were important for me in my journey to work once I came back. But it, like I said, it was also harder because you can't, it's like you feel incredibly strong and powerful and you know you can do it. And so there's no excuse anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, I know I can do this. And I've almost been like saying, oh, I can't, I'm a slave to this thing. And it's like, no, actually you can, and you have to.
Right.
And so I was like, fuck, all right, I guess I'm doing this, you know? Yeah. And, but it also taught me so many other things. I mean, in my experience, we went down to Peru, and we did four ceremonies over the course of a week. And this was the shaman, Chris. He brews like a particularly strong blend of plants. And so it's the normal ayahuasca brew with some extra tree bark from his property. And he, I think he called it like the warrior brew or something like that. But it was intentionally going to be difficult.
Brutal.
And the crew that went, it was perfect for us. That was sort of the mentality. Everybody kind of went in feeling like they were going to battle. And
it does give you that feeling a bit.
It does, yeah. And I, like, every night I was like, okay, here we go, you know? Yeah. Like, just, like, doing breath work just to prepare.
Me too.
Because you really do. Like, especially at the beginning, for me, it was always a really intense feeling like I'm fighting for my life, feeling like I died, feeling like, you know, I wanted to die, and you know, just all of these things. And then in like seeing death, experiencing that, and having like almost like rebirths too. I mean, it was always beautiful as well, but very, very challenging. And through that, you know, you learn so much. You get just like a download, and there's so many things in there about what you need to work on for yourself, but then also this recognition of who you truly are. And coming back to your normal life, it does become difficult because things don't feel like they fit anymore.
Right.
And that's a good thing. You know, that's information for you to continue to work with. And so for me, it kind of brought me back and has helped me maybe take a stronger stance towards living purposefully, right? Like going back to purpose. Like,
yeah,
I know what my purpose is and I know I'm working towards defining that better every day, but I can't ignore that anymore. In the same way, like, you know, I've moved beyond all of like the bad addictive behaviors that held me back. I finally let that stuff go. And it's this higher calling to become more you, and you can't unknow that.
Yeah. And that is where I've seen psychedelics be tough, right? It's like you get this knowing and then you're back to being you,
mm-hmm.
but you're not, but you are. And you're still like, so for me coming back has been, I tend to really look for the highest perspective possible all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is you can get really flighty. Like, you're not so grounded. And I'm a little airy anyway, just my personality. So one of the things that I came back with was this, like, really, I was like, I want to just do the human thing so well, you know, like really just be here, be present. And so coming back, it's like, oh, okay, well then here's all the things you haven't dealt with as a human.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, God.
Yay.
So it has been tough from that perspective. So, okay. So on the broader things, so you have these different healing modalities that you've used for yourself and mm-hmm. you're pursuing this purpose. What is the role, and I'm experimenting with this myself, what is the role that goals are playing for you in pursuit of this purpose?
Yeah. I think for me, the goal setting is important to, I guess, direct the purpose. So you have this inner driver that's, rather than being pushed or pulled in a specific direction, you're actually in the driver's seat, which is nice.
Gives you a forward aim.
Yes.
Right.
And you're more in control of where that goes. And I think that it's important to have a goal to know where you're driving, because otherwise you're just driving around and you feel on fire with purpose and passion, but you're not actually affecting anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
or you can't measure what you are.
You can't measure it. Yeah. So maybe you are affecting things, but you really can't quantify that in any way.
Yeah.
So I think for me right now, what I would say about goals is that as I'm figuring out and defining more of this purpose, it's goal setting in the sense of the next thing to explore. So I'm setting a goal to, and they can be huge or they can be really small. So like, I have daily goals, I have really long-term goals. Like the long-term goal to explore maybe what being a healer would mean in the context of Western medicine or Eastern medicine is applying to schools. Maybe this is part of my path. And as I go along that path and explore it further, and I'm, you know, driving towards that, I get more information about, well, maybe this isn't the right path, or maybe absolutely, I'm 100% sure it is. So I think for me, the goal setting has been trying things and then working towards that goal. And that's in my own personal life and professional life, but even with like athletics, you know, picking something to work towards, so you're not just spinning wheels and you can't, like you said, you can't measure progress, you
right.
can't measure anything that you're doing if you aren't challenging yourself and giving yourself something to, I mean, I guess an event or something like that to assess.
Yep.
So I think in all of the realms of my life, I'm maybe setting goals more now that I feel like, and they're coming from within me, but it's to give me direction as I drive. And I think before I just was really letting myself get pushed or pulled from external sources rather than moving from internal sources.
To me, that feels like the hardest or one of the most difficult parts for people that are, at least in the Western world, is you know, going towards something, setting goals, and leaving enough room that your goals don't constrict you into being miserable,
mm-hmm.
or constrict you into a path that's like, but I'm feeling called somewhere else, right? And I think the way I've been trying to conceptualize it lately is, I think we just place such an emphasis on the analytical thinking mind,
mm-hmm.
that we have divorced ourselves from our ability to intuit and feel things, and so because of that, it's very easy. Like, you can set goals on paper, you know, and the problem mm-hmm. is you're not on paper. So as you go after those and you feel it might only be a 50% fit or a 30% fit. And so, I've been experimenting or thinking a lot lately about how to how to convey that message, mm-hmm. you know, and how to do it myself, right?
Right.
It's very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what, I mean, the best thing is to work towards something and then you collect information on that path, on that journey. And sometimes the information is telling you that you're getting hotter and you're moving in the right direction. And other times it's like, no, that's not really what you should be doing.
Right.
And it is difficult to know whether that's legitimate information that is helping you versus something that's coming into your life as a distraction.
Right. And so that's the real rub for me is I'll walk away from some shit quick. Like, I don't have a problem pivoting.
Yeah.
Yet, like, you got to stick stuff out, you know?
Right.
So, so that's hard.
Maybe it's reevaluating or checking back in with where, like, why the goal was set in the first place and where that came from.
Yeah.
I think some goals I set out of ego and others were more genuine in nature. And I say genuine, not that your, you know, ego driving something isn't genuine, but just that it was more, God, I don't even know what the right word would be. Soulful, maybe.
Yeah.
Like a soulful, heartfelt.
Yeah.
That would be maybe more where the goal came from versus like, I need to prove to myself or to other people that I can accomplish this thing.
Right.
And that's happened to me a lot in business lately, because I started my own company, but I'm involved in a number of other ventures right now, which are awesome. But I'm also realizing that a lot of this stuff isn't me. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
And so I'm having to deal with, okay, all right, this is difficult because of, you know, complex relationships and situations here. And how do you manage that? But just coming back to, okay, well, what was the goal? Who said it, and what was the intent behind it at the time?
Right. I like the who said it. I like that because that's something, you know, sometimes I'll find my mind sending me narratives that are just total unhelpful bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And in those moments, I found one of the ways to walk myself through that experience of some kind of limiting belief that's coming up, or if I'm just feeling stuck, I know that if I'm feeling stuck, like there's something going on up here because...
Yeah.
There's nothing in the world that's like victimizing me ever.
Right.
You know, for the most part, I mean, right. You know, those situations exist. But in my life, most of the time I realize it's actually just some narrative I'm telling myself. So one of the things that's been really helpful is to just ask myself, well, whose voice is that?
Right.
Because, you know, you've been programmed. Your thoughts are actually programs. Your ego is programming.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can, you know, go back and it's like, a lot of times I think we feel like we want to move towards something that we feel called to. We want to move toward purpose. And at the same time, as soon as we go to pivot, we hear some sort of limiting belief or you can't do that type narrative. And often those narratives have been placed there by people that just aren't you and they weren't in the world that you're in and things are different now. And
mm-hmm.
So you were raised in a world you don't live in for sure, especially if you're our generation.
Right.
Because you moved through this tech boom. So it's like the world's not at all.
Yeah.
You know, like it took me 2 years to tell my family that I have a radio show without being on the radio. You know?
Yeah, true.
So, shit's just different now. And so I do love that idea of asking yourself, well then like, because I do think for me too, is like, I'll set some goals that are like to prove myself to that.
We all do it.
Who knows, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all do it. And it's, it kind of goes back to that conversation we had a while ago about intuition, but it relates back to that of using, maybe learning how to rely on intuition more in those moments and having that hopefully direct you a little bit too. You know, you can, in that moment of you're working towards a goal and things don't feel right, check in and it's like, is it just that I really want to quit because it sucks? Or is it really not the right fit for me? And, you know, feelings are flighty, they come and go. You could love something 1 minute and hate it the next, and that's normal.
Yeah.
But what's underneath that? And I think there's valuable information from every feeling that you have. It doesn't mean you have to act on it, but maybe question like, well, why is it that you feel that way in that moment? And use your intuition to guide you. And when we were talking about intuition before, like with regard to athletic endeavors, it's like, you know, do you keep muscling through something because you're not a quitter? And it's like, I mean, in the military, this is what you do, right?
Yeah, right.
I don't care how bad it hurts. I don't care if you end up crippled for the rest of your life. You're going to finish the damn thing.
Totally. Especially if you're in an SF community, right?
Oh, God.
Like, you're the one that didn't quit. So everyone else that quit is not you.
Exactly. And you'll break yourself over it.
Yeah.
And
we
were talking about the Grand Traverse that I did and just how I didn't do the bike the next day because I was so banged up from the run alone, and the ego and the non-quitter was like, I'll suck this shit up and I will do it, and right. I may not look pretty, but I'm gonna do it. And then I'm sitting there and I'm like, for what?
So for the audience, that was do you want to explain that
real quick? Yeah, the Grand Traverse was it's a like 41-mile ultra marathon. It's a trail race from Crested Butte to Aspen, and it's mostly above 10,000 feet. It's very rocky, very high altitude, just gorgeous, but it takes a lot out of you. And I messed up my knee pretty bad on one of the really steep descents. I stepped on a rock that basically fell out, moved out from under my foot, and I just tweaked my knee really bad, and then had to hobble the whole last 12 miles, which was mainly downhill, and just was like barely able to move. And the thought of riding a bike and like ripping something or tearing something in that leg just was terrifying to me, because right. I love to move, and to not be able to just to finish a stupid race didn't make sense to me. So right. I finished the run, and that was awesome. That in and of itself was an accomplishment. But the thing that sucked is that I didn't feel that accomplishment, because I was so bummed out about not riding the next day that I couldn't even let myself rejoice.
Took that from yourself.
Yeah. And I was so bummed out about it afterwards. And I was like, I'm never going to do that to myself again. Like, that was an accomplishment and I'm proud of it. And no, I couldn't do the bike, but it was the right call. And so I relied on this intuitive sense and like really sucking up the whole ego thing and yeah. just saying this is the right move. And I think moving towards a goal, the same thing can be applied of, shit, I said I was gonna do this thing, everybody's expecting me to accomplish this, but I know in my gut, like in my heart, I know this isn't the right thing for me. Like, and going back to my PhD, I could have done it then.
Right.
You know, that would have been another example. Yeah, I said I was gonna do it, but this isn't for me.
I think the unconscious fear, and I say unconscious just because I don't know that people have vocalized it or thought about it enough to vocalize it, but I think that we're afraid if we give in to that ego, if we like make the decision that's not in the interest of the ego, then all of a sudden it's like, well, now we won't do anything, right?
It's
like, you don't set any goals. You'll never finish anything. Or,
right.
You know, and I think that, because I feel that pushing me a little bit, mm-hmm. even though it's like, that's, I'm me. Like, I'm going to keep being me. I'm going to keep being interested in things. And worst case, actually, I'll probably just have a better motivation behind the things I do.
Yeah.
But I do feel like that's the fear for people.
And I definitely agree with you. And I think that, to your point, I don't think it's good to redirect all the time. And even though you may not, like, for instance, going back to the, like, school, you know, I it wasn't a good fit, but look at, and sure, I was miserable for a lot of those years. And, in certain ways, and in other ways there were good things that came out of it, but ultimately that led me down a path that opened up a lot of doors. So again, you know, I'm talking about like a physical endeavor, you could break yourself and really never be the same,
mm-hmm.
but for a career endeavor or a personal endeavor where it's something that the risks are maybe your time and your happiness, but you're not going to like break yourself over it, sometimes it's worth continuing and reaching that goal.
Totally.
You know, I think there's character building in that, certainly.
Yeah.
And many other important things are gained from it. So I'm not encouraging people to always pivot, but only you can answer those questions and know what you can live with.
Yeah, and this might sound more esoteric and even less helpful, but I think that if you can truly get in touch with that intuitive sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know when to pull the chocks and you know when to keep going. And I can't explain it any other way other than there's been a lot of shitty situations where it was like, but I just know that this is something we finish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something I do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a couple times where I felt like I did an ultra where I was totally broke. And it was the UROC race on the East Coast. It was this 100K.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it had a 30% finish rate. Like, there were very few people finish this race.
Dang.
And I was, like, second to last finisher or some shit. I don't know. But I had the sense of, like, I am breaking myself in such a bad way right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, it was like, no, I am not going to quit.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and when I finished, I had that feeling of, that wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I didn't listen to intuition, you know?
Right.
And I felt, so I don't know. But I do think it's a skill, but I do think that you start to learn to you start to learn when to stay in the dip and when to pull out.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example of when you don't listen to it. I mean, the only, because people ask me this all the time, like, how do you know what your intuition is? How do you listen to it if you don't even know what that voice is? And it's like, it really becomes a practice. You have to just, it's trial and error. You think that's your intuition and you do or you don't listen to it. And then you have information from that afterwards. And hopefully with each experience that you have in life, you keep getting closer to figuring that out. I don't know that anybody has a really good answer for that. I think people don't always get it right.
Right.
And to think that some people have it all figured out and, like, you know, they're just living by their intuition all the time is probably not realistic. But I think it's an important thing to maybe explore and work towards, that people can look at it as an interesting, not even a game, but an interesting thing to explore in life.
Right. And you know, I mean, I don't know what we're doing here if it's not that.
Right.
You know,
it
seems
about?
To be. Right. Yeah, so I think, yeah, that skill is tough for people. But I do think also, too, just accepting the things that don't work out, like accepting the misses, accepting it all as just sort of part of it. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, just a little bit of grace, like you're human,
yeah.
you know, and I
yeah.
think that from a high performer standpoint is the hardest part, because typically these people that get into things and just don't quit no matter what are really high performers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I think that they've cut themselves off to the human side of them in order to, at least that's what I did.
Yeah.
In order to succeed. And it's a lot harder, you know, it's a lot harder to not have that like absolutist mentality and still find success,
mm-hmm.
but you just got to work harder.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
It's kind of like talking, honestly, like I was thinking about that the other day. It's like people talk in absolutes and it makes them sound stupid.
Yeah.
If you don't have a million best friends, you couldn't.
Yeah.
Right. But like, you cannot talk in absolutes. You just got to work harder.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I think that like a really, at least for me, I'm finding like this, there's a sweet spot somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And as a human, you're just going to go in and out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, you'll never
sure.
like have it pegged, it seems.
Yeah. It's a process for
yeah,
all of us.
Totally. So one of the last questions that I ask everybody on the show, and it seems that I never tell people beforehand and I always forget. So if it takes you a minute to think, no worries. But if you could have morning coffee with anybody in the world, dead or alive.
Oh, man.
Right? I know. Just, you have to think like 7 billion that are alive and then however many, the 100 billion that have died. If you could pick one of them to have coffee with,
Oof.
Who do you think you'd go with?
You know, I'm gonna say this because it was the first person that came to mind. John Steinbeck, author. I love his... his style of writing really just resonates with me, and he describes the human experience in such incredible ways. And I would love to just talk to him about how he figured all of that out, if he
yeah.
was just born with it or if he just...
What did he write?
A ton of books, but Grapes of Wrath is one, and then Travels with Charlie Across America is another one. That's the one I most recently read. And
okay.
I aspire to write like him, to capture that experience, the human experience, and the internal one, the external one, all of those things so beautifully.
Yeah.
I'd actually really like to have some scotch with him more than coffee.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Awesome. Well, so for people that are listening to this and just want to support the work that you do and follow your journey, how can they do that?
That's a great question.
And you're wearing so many hats, like every time we talk.
I know, gosh, I'm doing so many things right now. I guess the only thing, probably the most consistent thing is social,
mm-hmm.
and that's Instagram and Facebook I don't really use, but and LinkedIn too, but yep, so I'm Doc Pate on Instagram, doc.pate.
Cool.
And then, Kate Pate on LinkedIn and all that stuff. So
sweet. Well, I'll have
stock
that
me,
up.
Stock away.
Right on. Well, hey, really, really appreciate you coming down to Denver.
Thank you.
Doing
yeah,
this with me.
Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Okay.